Good morning. It's 25th of May. Our first reading for the day is Joshua chapter 11. I'm going to read to you from a book on Joshua by Brother Maurice Beale. Brother Beale writes about the conflict with Hazor in these terms. Although Hazor was burned like Jericho before it, the people of Naphtali, in whose territory Hazor later came to be allocated, did not consolidate the victory. In chapter 11 and verse 13 we read, "As for the cities that stood still in their strength, Israel burned none of them, save Hazor only. That did Joshua burn." Only Hazor was burned. We might therefore suppose that of all the cities taken, it would be the least likely to be rebuilt. But it appears that Hazor was not only rebuilt, it was re-inhabited by the same people that Joshua displaced. And we gather that from Judges chapter 4, where we read of Jabin, king of Hazor. This was about 140 years after the city was sacked by Joshua. Naphtali's negligence caused Joshua's work to be neutralised. Dealing with sin is a little like gardening. Pulling out the weeds is fine, but unless there is a steady application to cultivation, the garden will soon become overgrown with the self-same weeds. The comment in Judges chapter 1 is telling. "Neither did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, nor the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but he dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and of Beth Anath became tributaries unto them." This record, written of a time before Hazor had again become dominant in Naphtali's territory, implies the means by which that dominance came about. Naphtali could have driven out the Canaanites if they had chosen, but they chose not to. Neither did Naphtali drive them out. The Canaanites outnumbered Naphtali. He dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. The Canaanites were put to tribute. This again implies that Naphtali had the upper hand at this point and could have completed their God-given task. They preferred, instead, to take tribute, which would have made life easier for them. The prevailing lesson from this example is the need for steady application to our work in the truth. Special efforts are fine, but unless followed up by consistent effort, may in all probability lead to the effort being wasted. There is a need, too, that we be constantly reminded of the precise purpose of our present pilgrimage. Israel got into trouble when they lost sight of their need to rid the land of the Canaanites, who, in their generation, were the seed of the serpent. When they perceived their life in the land as the end of their pilgrimage, and not the means, they lost their way. We are in no less peril of losing our perspective due to the seeming solidarity of all by which we are surrounded. One interesting comment in this passage is to the effect that Joshua hamstrung the horses of the enemy and burned the chariots. He did this because the Lord had told him to. But why? Israel had no chariots, and they might have been useful in future encounters with the enemies of the Lord. We cannot imagine any modern general destroying enemy armies, which was still in good working order. There were two reasons for Joshua doing so. First, Egypt was evidently the best source of cavalry horses and chariots, and God specifically forbade any trade in such things, for that would require the children of Israel going back to Egypt. And second, horses and chariots were for military purposes only, and, at least in principle, Israel was not intended to be a military power. As the psalmist put it in Psalm 20, "Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God." Thank you for listening.